to promote my new flower shop, I had one place print my business cards, another print my brochures, and a third, my signs. Now my roses aren't red, my violets aren't blue, my geraniums look dead, and I don't know what to do.
Staples can help your business stand out with signs, banners, and brochures that are a true reflection of your company. And now with Staples, spend $50 or more on print and marketing services and get $5 off your next in-store purchase.
Now my business is blossoming and I'm spending less green.
Exclusions apply. In-store only. Ends 6/23/18.
You are about to take a bite of White Apple Wisdom. The students and veterans who produce the White Apple Institute talk show encourage others with learning, mental, and invisible disabilities to ask Dr. Applewhite about how we can prevent dropout and burnout from school, work, and life. Stay tuned so you can encourage others and yourself to take a bite of White Apple Wisdom to change the perception of disabled to differently abled and succeed in the workforce. Learn more about us and support our mission at www.whiteappleinstitute.org or call us at 888-56-APPLE. That's 888-56-APPLE.
Good morning. Well, I just wanted to share with you this morning that our topic is suicide and overcoming depression and suicide is because we're getting a lot of information in, a lot of questions in from students. We're seeing a very big increase in depression. And depression, as most of us know in the field of mental health and social work, psychology, we understand that depression can lead to suicidal thoughts. So we want to nip it in the bud, so to speak, when we see someone who is experiencing some of the symptoms of depression, and we'll get into that in just a moment. Well, we have some special guests today that will be joining us, and I just can't wait to tell you about them. So stay tuned for the factor that we will be joined by Melinda Bale, an intuitive therapist, and we are also going to get a very special treat from Steve Erie, who will be coming to us to talk about the Out of Darkness walks. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce the episode. My first encounter with suicide, it was not very pleasant. There's nothing that we can go back on in suicide and think about a happy moment. If you've lost someone because of suicide, it always leaves this question in your mind about what you could have done to help. Not that you necessarily, hopefully, will not take on the blame of what that person has done, but it's real important to understand what can lead to that and some of the ways that we can try our best to intervene to prevent someone from not only making an attempt, but of course completion of a suicide. There's a high rate of suicide among college students, and we're talking about 15 to 24-year-olds, but they have usually issues dealing with separation from home and adjusting to a new environment and lots of other things that maybe will be brought out as our guests speak this morning. However, with the non-traditional student, the students that we work with at White Apple Institute and other organizations, we have to deal with that adult learner on a different level, and especially if they're veterans trying to adjust back into civilian life, because they deal with that same adjustment to a new environment, and they also have to deal with the issues of being able to perform at a satisfactory academic level. Most of the time, for me even, I find that most students are not able to go to, adult students are not able to go into the office and say, you know, I need some help on suicide prevention, because there's so many even cultural issues involved in that, shame, embarrassment. And so the information that they receive maybe in a pamphlet or on a poster in a wall may only introduce the concept that younger people are being helped by a certain agency. That non-traditional student that we work with, that's about 35, maybe 40 years old, trying to return to school, has children at home, maybe a veteran, has many, many more issues to deal with that are not on those poster boards or in those brochures. So the question that has been coming across is, are suicide programs actually working? Okay, are they helping us? Are they getting out the right information? Okay, so that's one of the things that we want to talk about today as we introduce some of our guests. And I'm going to bring on Ms. Melinda Vale. Melinda, are you there?
I am. Good morning, Dr. Applewhite. How are you this morning?
Doing so well. I wanted to introduce you and have you, you've been on the show before, and I wanted to really compliment you on your dedication to help our adult learners out there and veterans to understand something about life, the quality of life. And now we're going to talk about depression and how it can lead to suicide and what you're doing in that arena. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I so appreciate that you have me on the show. You know, every 14 minutes or so, someone in the United States dies by suicide. This has become something that we really have to address as a disease rather than the way that we've addressed it in the past. Depression can be fatal, just like cancer can be fatal. Depression can be treated, just like cancer can be treated. We have to start bringing an awareness of depression and its issues in this country so that people can move out of those feelings of being embarrassed or ashamed by their depression and start reaching out and figuring out how to make movement with their depression and get themselves back on track. And we need shows like this. We need walks like Out of the Darkness Community Walk to start bringing an awareness to this issue. I worked with many, many families that have lost loved ones through depression and suicide, and the devastation that it leaves in its wake is without question the worst kind of way that one can lose a loved one.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, Melinda, I don't know how closely involved you are with this work. I don't know if you understand that what we're asking is that people focus on not only the act itself, okay, and the possibility that that could happen, but on how we can intervene early enough to prevent things from going on as far as hopelessness and, you know, that sense of just giving up. You know, most of the people we deal with as students, when they get ready to drop out of school, believe me, it's a lot different, so much different than someone who is 19, 20 years old dropping out of school. Because they
Absolutely.
And they have children that are looking at them, and they have to go home and say, yeah, I'm not taking that course anymore. Well, why, Dad? Why, Mom? Why aren't you going to school? You know, so it's a double whammy.
It is. I think we have to start, maybe stop is the right word, stop being afraid to discuss it when we see someone that is depressed and, you know, open the door to allowing them to talk and to start making movement and bringing it to light and talking with that person and knowing what the signs and signals are of depression, knowing when someone is depressed, if we see that listlessness, if we see that guilt, or if we see that hopeless or helpless feeling around them, that we bring it up, that we get them to engage, that we talk, that we encourage them to get help, that we don't just look the other way.
Melinda, how did you get involved in looking at suicide prevention and intervention and your work with our special guest, Steve Shiro, who will be coming on in just a moment from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, okay? So when we get him on in a moment, we'll be able to really expound on the Out of Darkness walks. But I'd like to know how you, as an intuitive therapist, and the great work that you're doing with people, and tell us a little bit about that, Melinda. Please feel free to do that and give us your website. But how did you get involved with this suicide prevention stuff?
Well, I got involved with suicide prevention because I have so many families that come to me that have lost loved ones that way, and I counsel and help them connect to their loved ones on the other side and help them to make movement and understanding how to work through it in the best way that they can. And I also have a son who is 34 years old, and in his generation, it just seems like there are so many that are having that kind of depression, and so many of his friends have passed from suicide. He has at least five friends that have passed through suicide. And, you know, my husband also is retired Army, and he has done some work around some of the veterans that are also dealing with this kind of issue and depression and post-trauma. And it's just such an important topic that there's no real awareness, no real understanding, no real connectiveness in the public. We don't talk about it. We don't have a recognition of what to do. I think everyone should have the National Suicide Prevention Hotline in their cell phone, for example, so that they can give it out if they need to, that kind of thing.
Very, very good idea. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I want to say before we start bringing on some of the people in our switchboard, and also we have some people on the chat line that are sending in questions, I wanted to just overview a little bit on some of the things that are really, really, I guess, you know, like I tell the students, bugging you. What is bugging you, okay? And one of the things that's bugging them is that they don't feel, again, that many of the much of the information that's out there is really related to them. Okay, I talk to so many young women and men, and I say that not necessarily in age, in chronological age, but in maturity, that they are really overwhelmed with trying to raise children, trying to balance out family life, deal with the emotional challenges. Many of them dealing with disability issues, from fibromyalgia to bipolar disorders to PTSD. We just have a wide variety of students that are calling in and saying, hey, this is really bugging me. You know, I'm feeling like I'm giving up here, okay? What is going on? Why can't I get the help that I need? So what we are trying to encourage people to do now is to recognize, just like you said a moment ago, recognize that when someone is having or in that pathway to having suicidal ideations or thoughts, any kind of ideas, how do you know that? Well, one of the ways we know it is we can see the depression. I mean, you can see that sometimes. Someone is very, very sad. And as I've said many, many times before, we have to look at the factor that we all get depressed. We all have mood swings. That doesn't mean that we all have a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, okay? So we have to be very careful of not only self-diagnosis, but diagnosing others. But some of the signs that we see with depression, when you really think it's serious, is when you can see someone doing it over and over and over again. They are just consistently depressed, days in, weeks in, months in even, okay? And you're seeing some mood swings up and down. One day they're happy, one day they're very sad, and you just see this going in and out, okay? And also, I have noticed that when you look at a student that has their personal appearance has changed. You know, now I don't look too much at personal appearance, Melinda. I don't know about you. But I'm not into whether or not I can't probably remember if you dyed your hair or if you wore the same blouse last week. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But sometimes that personal appearance can be, it changes from whatever a person looked like 3 weeks ago, and now for the last 3 weeks I'm seeing a lower standard of their personal appearance. And I'm seeing...
Which is body language, yeah. Too, you know.
Good point. Body language. Yeah, and you know, I don't know where this is coming from, but I'm just going to share it with you. You know how some students will come in and it just automatically know in their heart, they just know that they are bad, okay? And I'm always wondering about that. They, you know, whenever something happens in their life, they bring up this thing about, you know, well, I've been told I couldn't do it anyway, and I've been told that, you know, I couldn't achieve that, so that's why, you know, I'm not good in math and I can't go finish college. And I always am able to trace it back, Melinda, to something maybe their parents have said, okay? And I hear, and it has made my senses so acute now to hearing parents when they say, he is a bad boy, okay? A bad boy. Over and over again, oh, that girl is so bad. She is so naughty, okay? So, you know, when you hear that, it's just, to me, it sets children up for feeling bad, that sense of low self-esteem. What else can I say?
Right. And it goes generational. There are generational patterns of that because we raise our kids the way that we've been raised. And the languages that we're taught create imprints in the subconscious mind. And then with that subconscious mind, we blink, breathe, our heart beats. We don't have an awareness that that's what's happening, but our subconscious mind is also what makes me feel, what makes us feel and think certain ways too, from what our parents have done.
Yes, it's almost like they live up to a label, okay? Mm-hmm. And I see this, and I see this many times with the disabled label. You know, one of the things we say at White Apple Institute is our vision is to see people change the label of disabled to differently abled, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Well, another vision I'd like to see is to turn this I'm bad, this I can't make it, this feeling of a loss of self-worth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to change that and turn it around for myself and on a continuous basis.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, folks out there, listeners. I'm sure Melinda can attest to the fact that it is not a one-time thing that you all of a sudden become this great optimistic person that every day everything is up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All of us have those ups and downs. But but the bottom line is that we get these tools together that we can use. So what kind of tools can you share with us that would help us to stop not only the domino effect of labeling our children as bad that starts this cycle of hopelessness, but also how we can help the adult learner in the present state, and especially our veterans. What ideas can you give us?
Well, before I give you a couple ideas, I also wanted to comment that it's not just from parents that people can start a belief system of not feeling good enough. You know, in today's world, there's all the bullying, the cyberbullying. Peers can do it. There are other ways that we get into a belief system. It's not always just from parents that people get depressed. You know, one of the leading causes of suicide is a failed relationship. There are many other things that lead to depression, and not just the way that parents raise us. But first and foremost, when you are feeling depressed to the level that you don't feel like you can get out of bed, and you feel that hopelessness, that helplessness, your performance changes in school, you don't feel like even showering, you feel listless, you don't find any happiness, you've got to go to a mental health person to get some help. You have to go to a counselor. You have to start talking it out. If you're suffering from post-trauma, you have to go to someone that specializes in post-trauma. That's first and foremost. One of the best ways to do some self-therapy is to journal and journal out negative thoughts and write some things down, because we don't want to keep those things inside. There are groups that you can go to talk about depression and some of those feelings. Just talk to a friend, talk to a good parent, talk to a good teacher, talk to a good counselor. Begin to express yourself.
Yes, and even with the sense of embarrassment, okay? And I find this many times in the African-American community, along with Native Americans. There's a tremendous amount of embarrassment when even introducing the fact that there's a sense of hopelessness and that I'm feeling badly. And there's just not a lot of education that goes out in a lot of communities around the world, but especially I'm talking about in the United States, that really talks about the chemical imbalances in the brain, and that it is there's nothing that's so different about depression, my friends. Clinical depression now. I'm not just talking about those up and down moments. Clinical depression is a chemical imbalance in your brain, okay? And it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's no different than breaking your leg. When you break your leg, you have to go and see a doctor. As Melinda is advising us right now, when you need help from a mental health perspective, call out, reach out to someone. And Melinda, don't you agree we have to evaluate who we're reaching out to? Because sometimes they can make the situation worse.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, Steve Shiro and I were just discussing that so many hospitals don't have beds and that they send people who are that depressed and suicidal away, and we just don't have enough facilities, and we don't have enough awareness to start making sure that we can treat depression like an illness. And to the shame of it, I want to say that four times as many males die from suicide than females. And so a lot of times a man is less likely to reach out for help, to talk about it, to open up. And a man is more likely to feel like he has to take care of it on, by himself, and to, you know, kind of stuff it down. And so that's part of the stigma with depression, is because when men are depressed, they feel like they shouldn't have to go somewhere and get the help that they need. And they have to have an awareness as well to open up to that.
Melinda, you are so right, and it definitely is a cross-cultural issue. It is not just among African-American males that have those issues. It's among white males. It's among Asian males. Men as a whole, because of the culture, the integration of the way that we have bred them, and even now today with our Iron Man and Superman figures, is that they are not supposed to be men. They're supposed to be men of steel. Okay, and what does that indicate? And so it's very, very difficult for men to reach out. And I find also, and maybe Steve Shiro, when he comes on, can share with us some of the disparity that goes on with the gender issues between female and male. One of the things that, and you mentioned just a moment ago, Melinda, the factor of recently, because it came up in my mind here, the Virginia senator, I don't remember his name, I believe he's from Virginia, his son stabbed him and then committed suicide. And I believe that the issues were that the father has seen, Senator Craybeads, that's his name, he had seen the symptoms, and what happened is they sent him back home from a mental health hospital because there were no beds available. So right into what you were just saying a moment ago, which, thank you very much for bringing that out. So I guess we're going back to that original question again. Are suicide prevention programs working, and why aren't they working for our particular population? Okay. One of the things I also wanted to bring out is, you know, I've been in this field for over 35 years and education and rehabilitation. And I'll tell you something. I have seen so many teachers that are unable to interact or even acknowledge the psychological, emotional, and social problems that go on with our students. And so there's a lack of awareness even in with our faculty about how to identify these things. And it's only when we get to the extreme that we start paying attention. But we need to start paying attention, don't you agree, a little earlier than that?
Absolutely, and we need to educate the educators about how to look for those signs and signals and those symptoms. And the general public needs to understand what depression is and not make it like something that someone can snap themselves out of.
Mm-hmm.
It has to start being looked at like any other disease.
We're going to start opening up to the people on the switchboard in just a moment. We also want to acknowledge the fact that I believe Steve Shiro is ready to join us.
I'm here.
Steve, thank you so much for joining us. Steve Shiro is the father of someone who unfortunately committed suicide, but he has taken that and moved it into a positive. And that's what we hope to do at the end of this show, Steve, is for people not just to leave. I can throw all kind of statistics at them, Steve, about what's going on, and you can too. But I'm hoping that people will leave this show today with a sense of, I know, number one, how to identify the symptoms, not only in myself, but in other people. I also am going to feel a lot more comfortable about going and seeking help, okay? I'm not going to let my depression overcome me so badly that I start playing on those suicidal thoughts. I know how to start my own self-intervention. How about that? Can we move that? Yeah.
Well, thank you again for having me on. I think programs like this, as has already been said, is what helps to get that ball moving and to increase awareness, which is vital to this to anything happening. I agree totally. I think we can throw statistics and numbers out all day long, and it's good to know that information, but it doesn't help the situation.
You as an educator, you've been in the business for how many years have you been? You just retired as an educator.
I just retired. I was teaching for 20 years, and mm-hmm. I just retired and been working not full time, but close to full time with American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, because
yes.
our goal is to increase awareness, to do research into this problem. To advocate for the mentally ill, and to educate. And one of the things that was brought up during the last half hour, which I think is vitally important and I agree totally with, as an educator, I think one of the problems we have is that educators, through no fault of their own, but they just mm-hmm. have not trained to see the signs of depression and suicide. And as was mentioned earlier, you know, we do a fairly good job of critical intervention. When someone mm-hmm. is at a point of critical need, we do a fairly good job, although not a great job. But we're
yeah.
really, really, really dropping the ball on the preventative, which happens well before the crisis situation. You know, it would be similar to a heart surgeon only treating heart patients once they had a heart attack. And not worrying about diet and other things that led to the heart attack. And
uh-huh.
so one of the things that AFSP is doing, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, is we're really advocating, and we'll be doing it again this January, we're really advocating by going down to the state legislature and talking to representatives and others about the need for teacher training in schools, K through 12,
so that they
understand that depression is something that can occur at a very early age, as sad as that is. You know,
yeah.
we have suicides as young as 10 years old in this country,
mm-hmm.
and that's
mm-hmm.
that's just a shame. That's just
and I also hear that in the elderly population that there's a very high suicide rate. And you know, Steve, one of the things that concerns me a lot, and I don't know if you heard earlier, that many of the students that have been writing in about this particular subject have talked about the fact that when they go in to even seek information or even on the web, that there's nothing there that's actually saying that they're dealing with family issues, balancing work and school schedules. I mean, the posters, the information just doesn't really bring out the issues of the adult learner.
Well, I understand that. And, you know, that's the nature of colleges is that they're geared more toward the young learner. But I think if we look at all of those indicators that we're talking about, we can sort of put them into the category of stress factors. And
mm-hmm.
There are different stress factors, obviously, for the older learner. But it's still a question of those factors increasing stress and doing well in school. That's sort of a common denominator. And balancing social life, family life, those other things. There are a lot of good agencies out there, and I can
yes.
give some of those if you'd like, some good agencies where students can turn to, especially veteran students. And I know that sometimes there is a hesitancy for veteran students to turn to the VA. I think that the first of all, and I'm going to say, and I know most veterans are aware of this, but AFSP has worked really closely with the Veterans Crisis Line to help improve that. And the Veterans Crisis Line, even though there's a hesitancy sometimes to use that, I think is one of the best first steps, because it allows for anonymous chat, it allows for anonymous text, it allows for anonymous phone conversation that might lead to finding those agencies that are needed. There shouldn't be any fear of calling the Veterans Crisis Line and worrying about losing anonymity. And it's a good first step. And AFSP has worked really closely with the Veterans Administration in instituting with what is called the Interactive Screening Program, which allows veterans to go on and do an interactive talk with a counselor where they can get immediate feedback. And this has been, almost a million vets have used this over the past few years.
Thank you. I didn't know that, Steve. Wow.
Yeah, and that number, if I can give it over the phone here, is 800-273-8255. And they press 1.
Very good.
And that's a good place to start. The other thing, and most veterans are maybe aware of it, I'm not sure, but if again, anonymity is something that they want to make sure that they can keep without their records going to the Veterans Administration, they can contact their local vet centers. And every city has a vet center. And there's vet centers across the nation, and I have the ones here in Arizona, and I realize we have an audience that goes beyond Arizona. But if they just contact the vet centers, and there are over 300 of those across the country.
Here's the problem. This is what the students are saying. They go online, they call the numbers, many of them can't get medication, they can't afford it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then, as we related just a moment ago, Melinda and I were talking about the senator's son who was turned away because of the lack of hospital beds. There's a shortage of resources in mental health. And then, on top of that, Steve, we have all these murder-suicide rates, okay, especially among students, okay? And it goes back very, very intensely to the factor that teachers, faculty, are not aware of the signs, because when I've just been doing my own research study. As a matter of fact, it was part of my doctoral dissertation. And as a veteran, I'm very, very concerned about this too. But looking back at all of the students, and especially any of the veterans, we can see that they have tried, the ones that have committed murder-suicide, they have tried to get help. And so what happens, the media has increased awareness of the factor that people who have mental health are in some way is correlated with violent acts, okay? And so that's one of the things that has increased the stigma and prevented people from wanting to come forward and say, hey, I've got a problem.
You bet.
How do we address that, Steve?
Well, we start with having conversations like we're having. You know, the reality is that the stigma of suicide goes back many, 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 many years, whether it's religious, whether it's cultural, societal, it goes back many years. And, you know, the image of the mentally ill as being dangerous to everybody, and the suicidal being dangerous to everybody, and the suicidal not being able to be depended on for anything, those types of stigmas run very deep. The way that we start to scratch that surface is through awareness and through conversations. Now, I know that that's not an immediate fix, but I don't think there is an immediate fix. What AFSP is trying to do, and what we do, I think, a pretty good job of across the country, is to continue advocacy. And in terms of veterans, AFSP has been very, very active in working closely with Washington in getting laws changed, laws such as the immediacy laws, which bring more funds into funding institutions that help deal with getting more beds in the community for those that need them, because that's critical. But above and beyond that, working closely, one of the things I think that we've been really helpful in is starting that conversation of getting the Veterans Administration to work more closely with local institutions, community-based institutions, so that the Veterans Administration isn't trying to handle the situation all on their own, that they're working closely with those organizations that are in the local community, because veterans are more likely to seek help from those community-based institutions than they are from the VA.
I cannot thank you enough for the work you do. The work that American Foundation for Suicide Prevention does across the nation. It's just fantastic, phenomenal what your organization does. And I see that there are so many different chapters. You opened up the Arizona chapter, and
That's
we appreciate
correct.
That. But you just don't stay in Arizona. You're back and forth fighting for legislation. And one of the things that I appreciate about you, and we're going to bring on some of the guests there that have been on, that are on the switchboard, eager to discuss some things with you, is that I appreciate that you didn't turn off from the questions that the students are asking. You're not avoiding the fact that there is a breakdown in the system, okay? And there are some issues. There's some issues with media and the way that media promotes an image of mental illness and the things that are going on. And I'm going to call you definitely our national spokesman, if you will, that you're going to help us bring more awareness to the adult learners and student veterans out there as they work on overcoming depression so that it cannot lead to suicide. Thank you so much for being on the show. Now, last comments in from Steve and Melinda, especially inspirational, I mean, any kind of inspirational message you can give us in this last minute that we have left on the show.
I also just want really, really quick, because I think this is important. When we're talking about suicide, and I always try to get this out to everybody, I always suggest that we try not to use the word committed. Committed has a very negative connotation.
Yes.
People commit murders and they commit crimes. I like to suggest to people to say died by suicide. I think my son died by suicide. He didn't commit anything. And I
yes.
think just those little things will help to change the conversation, and in doing so, reduce that stigma that we've talked about.
And thank you, Dr. Applewhite, for having me on today as well.
We close our show this morning thanking God, our Creator, our higher power. This is Dr. Denita Applewhite signing off with you.
Thank you for joining our show and taking a bite of White Apple Wisdom. Your donations support students and veterans with disabilities. It helps them to manage their emotional and financial crises, prevent dropout from school, work, and life, and most importantly, to change the perception of disabled to differently abled. Learn more about us at www.whiteappleinstitute.org or call 888-562-APPLE. That's 888-562-7753. Much love and peace.
Respect. It's more than a word. It's an underlying principle of success and humanity. In the U.S. Army, respect is one of our foundation values. It's the reason we can overcome every obstacle and defeat every foe. So if you're interested in joining a team where respect is earned every day, consider joining our team. And now, in addition to earning respect, you may qualify to earn up to $40,000 in bonuses. To find out more, go to goarmy.com/bonus or call 1-800-USA-ARMY. Paid for by the U.S. Army. Respect. It's more than a word. It's an underlying principle of success and humanity. In the U.S. Army, respect is one of our foundation values. It's the reason we can overcome every obstacle and defeat every foe. So if you're interested in joining a team where respect is earned every day, consider joining our team. And now, in addition to earning respect, you may qualify to earn up to $40,000 in bonuses. To find out more, go to goarmy.com/bonus or call 1-800-USA-ARMY. Paid for by the U.S. Army.